Hi, this is Gary Stavel. I want to talk to you this month about something a little different. I want to talk to you about selling retainers, but specifically selling retainers during a financial crisis like we find ourselves in at the moment. So selling retainers when it's a tough economy, when things are slower than usual, when companies are skittish about laying out fees to anyone, depending on what industry you're in, of course, but for a lot of companies, they are skittish and they're slower than usual, obviously. And so unemployment is higher, things have slowed down, and there's a lot of fear in the marketplace. So if you already sell retainers, then this will be some ideas perhaps on how you can position what you're already doing. If you've never really sold retainers, then this will be new information on how you can pitch from where you are, because I'll talk about transitioning from someone who hasn't worked on retainer before. And then also, if you've done some but don't have a lot of experience, or you've done them during a good market but you're not doing them during a bad market, then I will also be able to give you some insight on how you can position this differently. So it's not going to be a full course, I don't think, on how to sell a retainer. But it's specifically going to be zeroed in on what the nuances are and the differences right now in the circumstances that we find ourselves in. So let's talk a little bit about some of the nuances and differences. And why would you bother right now, right? So if you're not selling retainers right now, you might think, I'm just trying to get good search assignments, period. Trying to get enough search assignments of high quality that I can work on. So asking for retainers might seem like something that is going to make it harder for you to sell. And to some extent, you're correct about that, right? Obviously, getting people to pay you something up front is going to be harder than just working on contingency. But what you have to think about is the value of your time and how much more selective you need to be yourself as a business owner right now than you were before this crisis started. And I would argue that you need to be more selective, not less, about who you spend time with, who you work with, and under what conditions. And think about it this way. You can ask for a retainer every single time, and there's no negative consequence to doing that. None. Right? You can, if you want, you can fall back to a contingency arrangement. And I'll talk a little bit about that conversation. So if you can fall back to the contingency option, then what do you have to lose by asking for money up front? The answer is, from my point of view, nothing, right? But like all things that that matter and that I teach, you need to make a system out of this. You need to make it reflexive. You need to push through the discomfort of maybe not having experience doing this or even feeling skittish about asking today. You need to push through that discomfort to be able to get the result that you want. And not really going to be using the word retainer so much. I mean, I may as I'm discussing it with you, but not going to suggest that you use that word with your prospects or your clients. But I'm going to talk about some options on how you can get some assurance that you can get something. But part of this is you have to have the guts to actually ask, right? You have to have the guts to actually ask. And, you know, think about it from the client's point of view. They have a lot going on right now. They have a lot that they're worried about. If they work with you on a retainer, they do get some assurance that this one aspect of their job is handled, right? They've got all kinds of moving parts, all sorts of things they're stressed about. But if they give you a retainer, and if you're someone like most of my members in my programs, you're a serious, seasoned business owner with good ethics, you're going to take that search seriously. And the truth is, you are going to put that at the top of your priority list, right? So if you have five searches on your desk, and they're all contingency, and you've got no assurance, they're not giving you timely feedback, they're not responding quickly, they're keeping you at arm's length, you're not going to invest a ton of time into any one of those. You're going to gravitate toward whichever is easiest to fill, quickest to fill. You're going to get as many candidates in front of them as you can because you're worried about someone else putting the same candidate in front of them. And again, from the client's point of view, if they put it out to five other recruiters, that means that they've got all these recruiters calling them, all these recruiters asking questions, submitting candidates, squabbling over who submitted the person. That's a big headache for the client. So by giving you a retainer, they get to shut that faucet off. They deal with one person who takes the search seriously, and it's one less thing for them to worry about, and it saves them time. So I could go through all the reasons, and I may in a different audio, on why it's to their advantage to work with you on retainer. But just understand that you really have to believe that in order to properly sell a retainer. You have to believe that it is to their advantage to do that with you. And if you are in my roundtable program, you can show up to the Q&A sessions. You can ask me questions about different aspects. If there's something I don't cover on this audio, show up to a Q&A and ask me questions. I'm happy to expand on it during those sessions. So, but for the purposes of today, like I said, you got to have the guts to actually ask. And part of it is that you need to educate them on how you work, right? So one thing to keep in mind, I was on a class earlier this year, and Danny Cahill said that this year, during the COVID crisis, they have gotten more retainers than they got last year. So just as a point of reference for you, so that you can have some belief that this stuff can work, they have more retainers this year than they had last year by using some of the strategies that I'm going to suggest today. So one of the things is how you position it initially. So if you're talking to a brand new prospect that you've never talked to before, you could either sheepishly ask if they would be open to a retainer, or you could confidently say, this is how we work. Let me tell you how we work. And you could just lay out what your fee structure is and how that works. My suggestion to you is to say that this is how we work, okay? Because that's going to set it up much better and allow you to just go into the details. One of the things to think about is, why is it a good option for them to work with you this way right now? Why right now? And what you can do now differently than you would have in a good market is actually adjust the positioning of the language you use and also adjust the fee. So I'll give you an example. In a good economy, you might call it performance-based search. You might call it an engaged search. Probably wouldn't call it a retained search, but some language like that, performance-based, engaged. In this market, I would look at calling it something like a deposit, a down payment. You could even try layaway, although I'm not sure that one translates as well. I like a deposit, right, or an engaged search. And what you're going to do is position it so that you're being honest about the state of affairs for everyone. So what that might sound like is, Mr. Client, the reality is that we are all concerned about risk. You're concerned about risk. You're concerned about having options and not overextending. And my company, likewise, is also concerned about that. And what we found the best way to work, where we can kind of share and get the best working relationship, would be where we're able to lower your fee because you're able to lower our risk, right? So our contingency services are 29% and our retained services are 24% or 23%. And the reason we're doing that, that's not what we normally do. Usually it's flipped the other way. The reason we're doing that is obviously you're going to lower our risk and therefore we're going to give you a lower cost. And all we're asking for is a deposit to so that we know that you're serious. And what that allows us to do is put you at the top of our priority list. And that means that I'm working with between one and three companies in this way every month, rather than 10 to 15, which is what most contingency recruiters are doing. So that's the setup of the actual fee structure part, right? So you drop your fee for retainer. You're honest about the fact that they're lowering your risk and therefore you're lowering their fee. The other thing that you can do, and I learned this from Danny Cahill, is to make it where they can apply that fee that they're paying you to a different search if they fill it on their own. So normally in a retained situation, they don't really have the option to fill it on their own, or they can, but they end up paying you anyway, right? If you're the retained recruiter, they've made, let's say they paid a third up front and a third after 30 days, they end up filling the position on their own. They eat those two fees, and usually they still owe you the other third anyway. So it all depends on how it's structured, but in a traditional retained setup, they would still owe you the fee. And what clients are going to be worried about when you introduce this is, I'm cutting my options off, right? We're cutting our options off. We're already getting a bunch of candidates. I already have a few people in process. There's already somebody that I'm thinking of that I want to reach out to. So that's a legitimate concern that they're going to have, and they're going to want to save on fees. So what you can tell them is that this is just right now, not normally. But right now, they would be able to apply whatever they pay you as a down payment to another search for up to 1 year, right? So you, let's just say the deposit is $5,000. They pay that to me today. They're still allowed to recruit on that position. So it's not perfect for us, but it's better than competing with a bunch of other search firms, because that $5,000 you got is non-refundable. So from a cash flow standpoint, you've increased your cash flow. From a competition standpoint, you've greatly reduced your competition. And now it's just the client and you, right? And hopefully the client is slowing their searches down based on the fact that they've already paid you something. But if they fill it on their own for whatever reason, they can apply that $5,000 they paid you to the next search and for up to 1 year. If there is a difference in the salary range, so let's say you had a down payment on a position that paid $150,000, and then there's a new position that pays $250,000, the $5,000 that they paid you does apply, but they might have to pay some more, right? Maybe you need a $10,000 deposit for that search. So it's just, it doesn't mean that everything stays the same. It just means that that $5,000 they don't lose, that they already paid you. So that's sort of the differences in the technical part of it. The framing of it, as I said, has to be kind of a confident stance that you have. It's being honest about where you stand and letting them know that they're going to reduce the time that they waste communicating with recruiters by working directly with you. The other thing you can consider, so that's the perfect world solution that I would suggest. And that would be someone who doesn't already work with you, right? If somebody already works with you, we'll talk about that process as well. But the other thing you can consider is what might be called a back-end retainer. So let's say you make that pitch and someone says, that sounds good, but I just can't do it right now. There's no way that we can do that. You can pitch the idea of a back-end retainer, which would be easier to sell than a front-end retainer, just because they don't have to do anything right now except sign a contract. They don't actually have to cut you a check, right? So this is kind of a fallback position. So you can, and I'll put this into the quick start guide as well, the tips on how to position this. There's a few different ways you could do it. One is just a flat fee. That's probably the easiest thing, is to say, that if you fill up, we'll go ahead and work on this on contingency. We're going to be putting, you know, 20 hours a week into this. Myself and my team are going to be working on this. And if you fill it on your own in any, you know, from any source, then we would ask for a $2,500 payment. And that's just a small amount of what we invested in terms of time and research, right? So that's in the event that you fill it on your own from any source, you owe us $2,500. And that's something you put into the contract. Now you can map it out where you actually make it based on an hourly rate. That's a little more complicated. The way that is sometimes done is, let's say you have a research team and you have yourself as the rainmaker. You could say, for my research specialist time, it's $75 per hour. And for my time, it's $300 per hour. And maybe there's a cap that is not going to be exceeded, right? So you say up to $5,000. You can do it that way. And again, this is only if they fill it on their own. But I think it is simpler to just do a flat fee amount. $2,500, if you think about it, if you've just got $2,500 for working on a search but not filling it, it's not a lot of money, but it does help to keep the lights on. It does help with cash flow. And right now, that's important. And it's also a bit of insurance that makes you feel like you didn't completely waste your time, right? So for me, part of the reason that I got into Retain Search or made the switch was just the feeling that I'm wasting my life, you know, wasting my life working on positions with people who are not serious. And that used to drive me completely crazy. And I needed some way to deal with that, and retained work was the easiest way. The other benefit to think about with this kind of setup, you know, more of the traditional one that I mentioned at the beginning, is what kind of pace do you want to be working at? There are some people who really like a very fast pace. They like the kind of kinetic energy of contingency search. That puts you on a very reactive kind of work schedule, right? Because everything is constantly changing. Priorities are constantly changing. And there's no assurance of payment. So there's an inherent insecurity about that. And there's an inherent speed issue there, right? You've got to get candidates in before your competitors. So speed is a really primary part of contingency search. And that's why you feel like you have to check email at, you know, 5 a.m. and once before bed, because speed matters. I will say that if you don't like that, which I didn't, Retain Search is much more, lends itself to a little more of a proactive approach. Speed still matters. Speed always matters, right? But it matters less if you've got a signed agreement, if you've got some cash flow happening, if you've got assurance that you're getting paid something, no matter what. Then quality becomes more important. Speed becomes slightly less important, right? So that is a consideration for you when you're thinking about your the next 12 months of your life. You know, do you want to be operating on a very adrenalized schedule, or would you rather have something more methodical where you can sort of plot out your week a little bit? And Retain Search will allow you to do that. Other nuances of this would be, you know, the actual reasons why somebody would work with you on a retainer. So I'll touch on some of those now, because if you don't have training in that, that's going to be really, really important, obviously. One of the things you can think about is that contingency, to some degree, limits access to people that they want to recruit, right? So what I mean by that is that candidates get a ton of calls from a ton of recruiters. And the best candidates have figured out how to decide which ones to respond to and which ones to ignore. So the first thing that a good candidate says is, are you the exclusive source on this position? Or are you retained, if they understand the lingo, are you retained on this position? And if the answer is no, then the candidate knows that they are, the company hasn't made a commitment to one firm. The candidate knows the company hasn't prioritized the search. And that downgrades the level of the position or the importance of the position or the status of the position in the eyes of the candidate, right? It doesn't seem as valuable to the company or as much of a priority to the company because they haven't made that commitment. But let me back up a little bit, and I'm going to walk you through five or six reasons why someone should work with you on a retainer, okay, regardless of whether it's the traditional setup or this new kind of modified setup for the crisis we're all in. Because again, if you're sold on this, then you're going to be able to sell it to them. So reason number one is that a comprehensive search is going to uncover the best candidate, right? A comprehensive search is going to uncover the best candidate. And part of what you need to do when you're talking about this is map out for them very clearly what is the difference between your contingency service and your retained service. And if you cannot articulate that difference, then you're never going to be able to sell the retainer, because the client is always going to say, well, why don't we just work with you on contingency? What's the difference? And if you're not sure of that difference, you're not going to be able to convince them. So what you have to do is map out the differences. So here's how I'd explain that. If you hire a contingent recruiter, they will typically work on between 10 and 20 searches at any given time. And they do that because they have no assurance from anyone that they're going to get paid. So they're forced essentially to gravitate towards that which is quickest to fill and that which is easiest to fill and to skim the surface. And they're also incentivized to send you people who are off target. And the reason for that is, again, if they happen to not send you someone who might be a fit, but might be a waste of your time, doesn't really seem on target, if they don't send that person, but their competitor does, their competitor gets the fee. And so what happens is they have to kind of fill up your calendar with B, C, and A level candidates and send them over without a ton of research just so that they don't miss out on a fee. And this isn't their fault. It's just how the game is set up. Whereas if you work with me on a comprehensive search, performance-based search, if you give us a deposit, whatever that language is, I work on between 2 and 4 of those per month. So instead of being 1 out of 20, you're now 1 out of 3 or 4. That means you've gone to the top of my priority list, and we've got the green light from you to go much deeper on the search. We're not going to skim the surface. We're going to dig deep. We're going to talk to everyone. We're going to ask for referrals. We're going to use our network of other partners. This will motivate my staff to prioritize your position. We're going to go through a full interview process with them. Our interview process is 49 steps or whatever it might be. And it allows us to actually dig deep and find the best person. Okay, so that's really the reason number one. It enables you, it empowers you to dig deep and find the best candidate. Number two, I kind of already mentioned, it makes the search more attractive to the best candidates. Okay, so number two, it makes the search more attractive to the best candidates. And again, that means the company has made it exclusive. Higher level candidates are going to ask. It gives the search firm, us, more credibility to be able to attract top performers, because they know that you are the exclusive avenue to go there. And also, the candidate isn't called by multiple recruiters. And this is something to really point out to the client, because they may have experienced it themselves. And you can say, Mr. Client, this may or may not have ever happened to you, but it has happened with many candidates that when there's a position open, they get called by multiple recruiters on the same position. And the way that lands for the candidate is the company's unorganized. They haven't really thought this through. They put it out to anyone and everyone. And it's, you know, not very appealing to go for that, because they just think it's been smeared or sort of put out everywhere by any means necessary. So it lowers the value of the position. So that's reason number two. It makes the search more attractive to candidates when they know it's exclusive. Reason number three, the client company is represented only one way in the marketplace. Okay, the client company is represented one way in the marketplace. So, Mr. Client, in a contingency situation, you've got five different recruiters, each telling five different stories about your company, the vision, you as a leader, you as a manager, the scope of the position, the future opportunity. That is being delivered five different ways by five different people. And by the way, you have to inform all of them about all of that. Whereas if you work with me, we take the time to make sure that I understand the message you want to convey, what the attractive aspects are about the position in the company, and I tell your story one way consistently in the marketplace. And, you know, obviously we only have 2 to 3 searches, 2 to 4 searches we do at any given time. And typically companies give us their most important positions and the rest they can farm out to other recruiters. Okay, so that's reason number three, companies represented one way in the marketplace. Reason number four I've already touched on, and that's that it saves time for the client because they're dealing with one search firm. And remember, what do people care about most? They care about their money. They care about their time. So you don't want to overlook this one. And I've already kind of articulated how it can be a mess for them, having five different, you know, recruiters squabbling over who submitted the candidate first. It's costly. It's a headache. And it's time consuming for the client. And feel free to use the tried and true. It might be sound old, like you've heard this a million times, but remember your client probably hasn't heard what I'm about to say, right? So think of it this way, Mr. Client or Ms. Client. If you had your taxes to do personally, do you think it would make sense to give your information to five different CPAs and tell them, go ahead and take a stab at my taxes. And then whichever one of you, you know, gets it to me first, you're the one I'll pay. And for the other four of you, for all the effort you make, you'll make nothing financially. So the question is, Ms. Client, do you think that you would get the best work done that way? It was just based on who got it to you first. Do you think it would be the best job done on your taxes? And then the second question is, do you think you would get the premier CPAs to agree to that sort of arrangement? Do you think the best CPAs would agree to that kind of arrangement? And the answers to those two questions are completely self-evident to everyone. Everyone knows the answer is no. You would not get the best CPAs, and you wouldn't get the best work done. So again, even though you may have heard that before, keep in mind your clients have it. Stories really help to illustrate your point. That one's kind of a duh, you know. It's really obvious when you tell it that way. So I would use that one again. The system is the solution, right? Installing something that you can do every time is the way to kind of make it muscle memory for you. I would just tell that story every single time you pitch, because by doing that, you're going to get really good at telling that story. Reason number five is the recruiter acts as a team member, not as a competitor. The recruiter acts as a team member, not as a competitor. So if you're working on contingency, the recruiter is your competitor, because they're shopping the same candidate to you that they're shopping to your competition. Now, this is a secret. I don't know how well known or, you know, how secret it is, but it's basically an industry secret that contingency recruiters don't talk about, which is, if I've got a great programmer, yes, I'm sending him to you, but I'm also good if I'm doing my job, I'm sending him to all your competitors at the exact same time. And while you're scheduling interviews with me, I'm scheduling interviews with them. And if they're a little ahead of you, I might be working on an offer with one of your competitors while I'm setting up an interview with you. And again, this is, some people call this contingency bashing. I don't. I call it telling the truth. And I don't blame contingency recruiters for it, ever, because that's the setup. If you don't give any commitment, then you can't expect a high level of commitment from the recruiter. What you're doing is helping them to understand, oh, it makes more sense to work in a collaborative way with some skin in the game, right? So, and you have to illustrate the flip side. When you work with us, by putting a deposit down, you can be assured that any candidate that I send to you will not be sent anywhere else. Not until you've finished with them and you've given me the green light that you're not going to move forward or you do want to move forward. And what that means is any candidate that I submit to you is not going to be tempted with multiple offers from your competitors. That means we're on the same team rather than competing against each other. Okay, so to recap, those are five specific reasons why in any market someone should work with you on retainer. Number one, a comprehensive search uncovers the best candidates. Number two, it makes the search more attractive to high-level candidates because they know the company has made it exclusive. Number three, the client company is only represented one way in the marketplace. Number four, it saves time by dealing with one search firm. And number five, the recruiter acts as a team member, not as a competitor, because they're not going to shop your candidates to a bunch of different companies. So that's some of the reasons why somebody would use a retained recruiter. Now, in terms of what they're going to look for from you that you have to be aware of, is that when you sell retained search or anything where you're getting money up front, they're going to dig more into your background, right? They're going to dig more into your track record than they would otherwise. And that's because they are, they're investing in you. If you, again, no commitment, they don't really have to do much due diligence because it's just performance based on contingency. But this way, they're going to want to do more due diligence on you. So what are they going to want from you? What are they going to want to know that you should be prepared to talk about? We can boil this down to four different areas that they're going to ask for or want to know about. The first is a high degree of comfort with you. If you're the search consultant, they're going to want to be really comfortable with you. And this is both on a chemistry level, an emotional connection with you, and also on your competence. So on the competence, what do you need to be prepared to talk about? Obviously, your years of experience, similar positions that you've had success filling, your industry knowledge. So specific to you, what is your experience in the industry? How many similar positions have you filled? And how long have you been doing this? Right? So that's kind of the resume part of it. But on a comfort level, there's another class I teach called the Charismatic Recruiter, where I go through how you can gain influence with people, how you can gain trust with people through mostly nonverbal communication. Or nonverbal, but sort of a subtext of body language, speaking style, pace, et cetera. Other things that you do to create comfort with someone. And there was a study that was done, I'll see if I can remember the details of it in broad strokes. The study was looking at who gets funding in different ways or who gets their ideas accepted in different ways. And it looked at business plan pitches, it looked at telephone sales calls, and I think it was, what was the third category? It was IPOs or startup money, basically funding for startups. And there was a couple different things that came out of it. But one of the things that they mentioned as indicators of who was successful, there was two that I remember. One was genuine enthusiasm for what they were talking about. And the second was social comfort, a social easiness. So the genuine enthusiasm part is really tied partly to your belief in what you're talking about. It's easy for me to talk about why a client should work with me on retainer because I firmly believe that they should. I think it's better for them if they do. And I believe that on a sort of a biochemical level, right? I really believe that. And from that standpoint, that belief part, think of it this way for yourself. And maybe I already gave this example in this training, but in a nutshell, if you've got 10 searches on your desk, one of them is a retainer, the other nine are not, you already know which one you're going to prioritize. You know which one you're going to work the hardest on, which one you're going to feel obligated to stay up late at night or to get to the office earlier, to work on Saturday, the one you're going to feel like you got a gun to your head to some extent to fill, right? That's the retainer. That's all you have to, when I say communicate with enthusiasm, that belief, you know that to be true. So you have to communicate that to the client. You can say to the client, I will not let this go unfilled. It will be my job to get up in the morning, and when I go to bed at night, I will be thinking about your search. First thing in the morning, I'll be thinking about your search before I go to bed. I'll be thinking about your search on Saturday, right? Whatever that natural language is that comes out of you because you actually believe this is how you should communicate when you're thinking about this. So again, what are the things that a client is going to want from a retained firm? Number one, it's a high degree of comfort with you. And that comes partly from your resume and then partly from your enthusiastic belief in why they should purchase a retainer. And then the other part is the that social comfort, which this class really, I don't have time to dig into that now, but there is a class I teach called The Charismatic Recruiter that does dig into that. And just, I guess, one tip would be that your presence, meaning how present you are when you're talking to them, is the biggest part of that social comfort. And your presence is sort of enabled to come out or to really be there with people when you feel confident about what you're talking about, right? And that confidence usually comes through rehearsal and experience, of course, but rehearsal and preparation. So if you're thinking about how can I be more present with my clients and create that sense of connection with them, preparation and rehearsal for these things that I'm talking about, being able to sell the benefits of search, understanding what the firm is going to want to hear from you, and then rehearsing those things as often as possible. And in the Quick Start Guide, it will outline the reasons for why they should work with you on retain, and also these four things that they're going to look for from a consultant. So number one was a high degree of comfort with you as a person. Number two is the credibility of the firm itself. Right. If you're a solo operator, then I guess those are kind of tied one and the same. But if you have a company, they're going to look at the years in business, your growth rate, your specialization, all of those things. So you should be able to talk about both you as a person and your company separately. And then number three would be your track record of success. Right. So for the company, how many placements do you make? Do you have references from similar searches? And by the way, if you're not getting letters of recommendation from your clients, you want to start getting those now, right? So for every successful search, again, the system is the solution. After every search, I ask for a letter of recommendation and preferably on their letterhead. There was a trainer, I don't think he works anymore as a trainer in our industry, by the name of Jeff Scrutiny. You may have heard of him. If you are an old timer like me, who's been around a while, and he used to talk about the letters of recommendation that he had, because he would make a very specific effort to ask everybody that he made a placement with for a letter of recommendation on their letterhead. And the letter might be one paragraph long, but it's obviously got the person's title, the company letterhead, and saying some good things about Jeff. And at the time that I saw him train, he had 500 letters, 500 letters of recommendation. He said that if he wanted to, if there was a prospect who wasn't returning his cold call or his cold emails, that he could email them one letter of recommendation every week for 5 years. Is that the math? 500? Yeah, 10 years, I believe, right? So every week he could send them a new letter of recommendation, not a repeat, for 10 years straight and just bludgeon them with credibility. So if he walks in with a binder full of 500 letters of recommendation and plops that on the client's desk, and you walk in with zero letters of recommendation, you can guess who's going to get the job, right? That social proof is so powerful. And it doesn't take a lot to ask for that. Now, if a client, if you don't think you're going to get it from a client, you can also kind of disguise it into a survey, right? So after the placement has happened, you could send a very short survey, and it might say, you know, what were the things that we should continue to do? What were the things that you liked about our service that we should continue to do? And maybe they answer that question. And then the last question is, can we use your comments as part of our testimonials page? Or testimonies, can we add your comments to our testimonials? And that might be a checkbox. And if somebody checks that, then you can take whatever they said you did right and turn that into a testimonial. Right? It's not as good as actually having the company letterhead, but it's still a comment that you're able to use. So, track record of success for the company. And then number four, what does the client want to hear from you? Is some reasonable time frame for success, right? What can they expect in terms of timing? How long is this going to take? What is your estimate? And that's always a guess, right? It's always a guess. One thing that some companies, some search firms will do is actually have the second installment. If you were going with the third, a third, a third, you could have the second installment be performance-based, based on some deliverable. So you might say one third is due up front, one third is due after we've provided you with three qualified candidates. So once we've submitted three qualified candidates, that's the trigger that then means we send the invoice for portion number two. Now that's more of a traditional, it's a variation of a traditional retained structure. But I've always liked that one because it does give you a different discussion to have with the client. And in theory, you could integrate that here too if you wanted to, right? It'd be one extra way to sell. That's something you could pull out. In theory, you could break up that initial payment into two smaller payments. One they get up front, or you get up front. The other one after three qualified candidates. The caveat there is the word qualified, right? And this is something else to think about. There was an article years ago called Retained or Chained. You know, retained or chained. Are you retained on a search or are you chained on a search? And the danger, there are dangers with working retained. One of them is that the client starts changing the specs midstream. Because in a traditional retained situation, if you retain me to work on a CIO position, and halfway through, you go, you know what? We really don't need a CIO. We actually need a CFO. So let's just transfer what we paid you to a CFO position. Well, traditionally, that means I have to send you a new invoice for a new search from scratch. So now you owe me two fees, right? Because literally, these are two separate searches. But that can happen to you. Not that extreme, but some variation of that can happen to you. oh, we thought we needed someone with this background, but actually we're going to need this. So everybody you've sent so far is unqualified based on this new thing that we just told you about. So the way to avoid that is to have them sign something, preferably. If I'm doing a retainer, I need a signature on what I'm about to tell you. But as a fallback, you could have an email. That's not as good. But you'd want a signature, just a very simple half page. After you've done your intake with the client, you guys have agreed what is a successful candidate. You've done your normal in-depth intake on the position. And your job is to come up with the must-haves and to separate those from the wish list items, right? And what you really want from a being able to cover yourself standpoint is as few must-haves as possible with as wide of a berth of option as possible, and then a broader wish list, right? So if you were going to send a half page something for them to sign, it would say, you know, Mr. Client, these are the specs we've agreed on what constitutes a qualified candidate for this position. And it would say must have colon 1, 2, 3, 4, right? Between 3 and 5 is good. You don't want to go too far with those. So you're really, what really is a must have? That you articulate those in clear language. And then underneath that, wish list items, 1, 2, 3, 4, signed, dated. And now this is our agreement of what we're working on, of what we both have agreed we're looking for. And then when you say we're going to send you 3 qualified candidates, quote unquote, that means candidates that meet that criteria that you signed at the beginning of the search, not something you may change later on. Right? And then if you had to do a replacement candidate, that signature that you're going to have also protects you in that way. You're now agreed on what you're hunting for that replacement, because as you know, you place a candidate, they fall out. When you go to replace them, they can do the same thing. Oh, things have changed. We're now looking for something different. And you're off on a wild goose chase. So I'm going to end it there. I told you this is kind of a breeze through of some basic concepts on how to sell a retainer with the different language that's specific to selling in a down economy. So let me just do a little recap of what I've covered so far. And then again, if you've got specific questions, bring them to the Q&As and we can dig into anything that I missed there. So first of all, I talked about the differences of selling in a normal economy versus in a down economy. I said in a down economy, you can position it as a down payment or as a deposit. You can be honest about the fact that if they lower your risk, you're going to lower their cost. And you can also allow them to apply whatever they put down to another search for up to 1 year if they fill it on their own. And that means they have the option to continue with whatever referrals that they have in the queue or even stuff that comes in from their website. Also, I talked about the reasons why they should hire you on retainer. And I went through 4 or 5 of those reasons. Number one is that the search, you're going to turn up the best candidates by having an exclusive search. It gives you the freedom and the go-ahead to dig deeper and come up with the best person. Talked about the second reason they would do it is that it makes the search more attractive to the candidate to know that it's an exclusive search. The third reason is that the company is represented one way in the marketplace by one person, that's you. The fourth reason is that it saves them time dealing with one search firm rather than 5. And the fifth reason they should work on retainer is that the recruiter acts as a team member and not as a competitor. I also talked about 4 reasons or 4 things they're going to want to know from you to verify your credibility. Number one, they're going to want a high comfort level with your background as a consultant, which is your years of experience, positions you've worked on that are similar, your industry experience. Second thing they're going to want to know from you is the credibility of the company, how many years you've been in business, your growth rate, et cetera. Third thing is your track record of success. How many placements have you made? Do you have references? Do you have letters of recommendation? And then number four is a reasonable time frame for success. Can you give them an estimate on how long it's going to be? And also talked about the importance of getting them to sign off on the must-have criteria versus the wish list criteria. And that's where we got to. So let me know what you thought of this session. As always, shoot me an email to info@therecruitinglab.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts, pro or con, or what I missed. And I'll be back with you next month, same time, same place, with another audio training. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.